Hello and welcome to Mac Expo 2005 and to the Macworld Conference 2005 from Olympia in London. This is a special edition of TechCasts featuring Sam Downey and
John Walters.
So John, can you tell me more about yourself?
Yeah, I'm an engineer by trade, electronics engineer. I've worked for two bigger American companies and now own a share in a small company that has nothing to do at all with computers. But I've been a Mac user since the early 90s and my first machine was a Macintosh LC2 back in the 68K days. And I've been enjoying visiting trade shows like Macworld, Mac Expo, Apple Expo and the like. And I've also enjoyed this show and I've kindly been invited by Sam Downey to join him as a guest on his show.
So coming up in this edition of TechCast, we have interviews with David Pogue
and Ian Artcole
and a whole lot more from Mac Expo 2005 and
Macworld Conference UK 2005.
So John, as we're walking around this expo floor, what's been interesting for you? Is there any standout products that you've seen?
Well, the first thing that I did have to check out at the Apple booth was Front Row. You know, this front end for iTunes and iMovie and all that stuff that you can sort of use a remote control that is infrared operated to remotely control your iMac and have access to all the media. So it's, I mean, this is the perfect thing, a perfect step towards a set-top box by Apple. And I've been really impressed. It's been done so stylishly. I've never considered getting a Microsoft Windows Media Center Edition PC because when I had the first look at the screenshots, it was all a bit clunky and not really stylish. I have to admit that I'm decidedly a victim of the Steve Jobs reality distortion field. So
yeah.
Front Row is amazing. But I want to have this on a Mac Mini, probably with an Intel chip. And this is the perfect set-top box for any Mac fan. This is going to be great.
But it does look like a copy of the Windows multimedia player. What do you think about that?
Well, of course, functionality-wise, it is, but I think Apple has a history of taking existing things and just giving them a very stylish makeover. So it's nothing really new. I mean, it's just like the same thing with the iPod video. The iPod video, per se, is nothing new. You have similar devices that can do video, for example. Most prominent one is probably the PlayStation Portable.
Yeah.
But the way Apple has integrated that gives it sort of a design edge. And I think it's the same thing with Front Row. It's just a natural step of integrating the iLife suite that we have seen before so that you could import an iTunes song and use it for an iMovie, for example.
Sure.
This is just a logical step for presenting those media. And I think it's brilliantly done, brilliantly done.
There's a few things which you've seen on the show floor. There's a little music section, and it is really, really small. They've got a music stage where they've got a really great pro setup for maybe composing film. That's what the setup is, a huge, large LCD screen, along with a full surround sound 5.1 system, running Final Cut and also Logic Pro. And it was really superb hearing a few things from that stage. Have you found anything else on the show floor that stood out for you, John?
Well, let me just comment on what you said. I think if we look at the show floor here, and also if we look at the people in London, there are so many iPods in use, and naturally there are so many accessories to be sold or to be made available on the show floor and presented at the show floor.
Yeah.
I'm with you on the fact that it's a bit disappointing to see that there's not that much that targets people who make music. It's all about listening to music, about consumption of music, which is fine, of course. But it would have been great if there would be a bit more prominent display of tools that you could use for making music beyond that excellently done stage that you also saw.
So now let's go into our first interview featuring David Pogue. We met him at the Macworld UK conference just after he had spoken, and he did a really superb presentation, seminar. John, what do you think of David Pogue's presentation?
David has one thing going for him. He's always entertaining. So even if you're not really into what he's presenting, the way he's presenting it is just amazing. It was, for me, it felt a bit like it was more targeted at lower to mid-level experience on the Mac, but I did learn a few tricks, and I'll probably blog about them.
So let's roll the David Pogue interview at Macworld Conference 2005. So welcome back to TechCasts. I'm Sam Downey, and with me is
John Walters.
And we have a special guest is David Pogue from Pogue Press O'Reilly. He's the weekly tech columnist for the New York Times. He's the number one best-selling Macintosh author, and he's also the Emmy award-winning CBS correspondent, alongside a regular of NPR's Morning Edition, and the creator of the Missing Manual series. And the book which I have in my hand right at this moment is the Mac OS X Tiger Edition. David, welcome to the programme.
Well, thank you, and I must say your memorization of my bio is quite impressive.
So we're here today at a Macworld UK conference. So can you tell me what your session was all about?
Well, primarily it was about trying to get a broken projector to work, but what it was supposed to be about was tips and tricks on Mac OS X Tiger, and it's a four-hour marathon that's mercifully broken up into a morning and an afternoon session.
You just said that tips were the topics of this one. We all know that you also have some tips in the form of a video podcast that you publish on the New York Times website. What kind of environment do you use? What is the David Polk home studio look like?
That's a funny question because I actually, and you might know this, but I got an email from the editor-in-chief of PC World one day that he asked the same question. He said, by the way, we're thinking of launching our own online videos, and we wondered if you could outline for us the production suite that you and your staff use to put on your videos in your studio there. And it was just screamingly funny because what it is, my staff is a tripod with a Sony camcorder stuck on it, and my production suite is iMovie. I literally stick the tripod in front of me and press record and run around and sit in the chair and say what I need to say and then run around and turn off the camcorder and then dump it into iMovie and dress it up with music and effects and cutaways and stuff like that. But I do it myself. It takes about 2 or 3 hours each week from start to finish. The videos are 2 minutes long. They're all on the New York Times website right now. They're high on entertainment quotients, and there's some informational value there too.
How do your family feel about being in your videos?
Well, my kids fight over, hey, you used her last time. So the kids really enjoy it. They think it's special. And the ultimate thing recently happened. My son, who's my oldest child, started third grade, new classroom, relatively new school. He was actually walking down the street, down the hallway rather, and somebody recognized him. He's 8 years old, and someone recognized him from the Times website. To him, that was the ultimate.
Tell me more about your recent book, your best-selling book, in fact, the Missing Manual series, and if you can tell me more about the Mac OS X Tiger edition.
I'd be happy to. My favorite topic. There are now 35 or so books in the Missing Manual series, and I'm happy to report that this is the 800-pound gorilla. This is the one that outsells all the rest put together. It's a giant, giant seller. In fact, during most reporting periods, it's the number one computer book, not MacBook, computer book, which is interesting to me because it shows everybody who says, oh, the Macintosh with its 3% market share. Well, yeah, if you find the right niche, you can do quite well. So
what's in it?
Oh, just a lot of words, pictures. I deliberately released these books late. There's never been a Mac OS X Missing Manual that's come out the same day as Mac OS X. And the reason is, as the subline there says, it's the book that should have been in the box. It's the manual that Apple didn't write. It's everything, you know, that the online help would say if it were written well and had jokes, plus a lot more. And what I mean by that is the bugs, the workarounds, the add-ons, the tips and tricks that people find after it comes out. So I wait until the operating system comes out, and then suddenly the web is filled with people discovering tips and tricks and hidden features, and if you hold down this key, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's what makes the book so rich and so successful, is not just the facts, but also the cultural richness to what happens to an operating system after it's out.
And you're also the author of Macintosh Books for Dummies.
Yeah, I used to write the Dummies books. I have now given them up, although three of them are still in print. Magic for Dummies, Classical Music for Dummies, and Opera for Dummies. That would be Opera, the art form, not the web browser. I was very frustrated by the Dummies publisher, who, it's a long story, but they have a very busy publishing schedule, and they don't take a lot of care with individual books, so We've parted ways. And as a matter of fact, there's a new edition of Max for Dummies coming out, which for 8 editions was my title, which I have now relinquished, and there's now a new author writing that book. That's the end of an era. Or I should say the end of an error.
So talking of magic, are you a member of the U.S. Magic Circle?
I am. I'm a member of the International Brotherhood of Magicians. And actually, when I was here in London 2 years ago for the Expo UK, I had been emailed by this wonderful British magician who's a member of the Magic Circle here, who said, if you have any time, I'll take you for a visit. And he did, and we went to the headquarters here, and he showed me around these incredible artifacts and a bunch of guys sitting around doing tricks. It was an unforgettable day.
And have you performed at the Magic Castle, which is the famous magic place in Los Angeles?
The only magic castle I've performed in is my home. No, I've never even been there, although I've got to get myself an invitation. I hear it's wonderful. I'm strictly amateur and dinner hour and birthday party sort of magician, but I really enjoy it, and I really like what it's done for my confidence.
Actually, speaking of magic, looking at this tome about MechQuest 10 Tiger Edition that you wrote, would you like to share with us some of the magic that you used to actually write such a book? Because what's the process like? Do you really start with a blank piece of paper? How do you compile the stuff? How do you structure it? What's the work process of writing such a book?
Well, at this point, fortunately, it's sort of self-fulfilling because I'm just revising each year. You know, each time there's a new version. So each book starts with an outline and then proceeds to the check. So I submit an outline to O'Reilly and say, this is what I have in mind. And they say, okay, here's some money to live on while you write this book. And that's every book author gets that advance, as they call it, to live on. I think the most interesting part about these books is that they are all written on a PC. And I get a lot of shocked looks and hate mail for that. But the reason is I have a nasty little wrist ailment called tenosynovitis, for which there is no surgery that helps. All you can do is not type. I began my career not as a writer, but as a Broadway theater conductor. Not many people realize that. And so when this problem first cropped up, the hand doctor said, just stop using your hands. I'm like, great. I got two ways of earning a living. I play the piano and I type. You got any other ideas? So anyway, I use this amazing, amazing Windows speech recognition software called Dragon Naturally Speaking that is truly Star Trek-like in its accuracy and its speed. And it's not available for the Mac, and there's nothing for the Mac that's anywhere close to that good. So, alas, I do. I treat my PC as a peripheral for my Mac. They're connected by an Ethernet wire. The PC's hard drive shows up on the Mac screen as an external disk. So there's nothing to it. I dictate right into Microsoft Word on the Windows machine, save the file, turn my chair 45 degrees to the Mac, open the file without any format conversion or copying or anything, edit it, do the graphics, and then submit it to the editor. So it's really a great system.
Let's have a look at your career history, because we know that you're even an Emmy Award winner. What was the trigger that actually made you write books? Was it in addition, or was that the other way that it actually changed careers there?
Well, I was working in the theater, which, as any musician can tell you, is not the way to buy a house in the suburbs and raise a family, financially speaking. And music software was very expensive. Finale, the sheet music program that everybody used and still uses, was $1,000 when it came out. So it occurred to me, I was a member of my local user group, the New York Mac user group, that if you agree to review a piece of software for the newsletter, you get to keep it. This was like a light going off in my head. And from that moment on, every time I needed a piece of software, I would ask to review it. And they send it to you, and you keep it for free. So I was a regular contributor to this newsletter for no other reason than as a cheapskate. It was a way to freeload software. And over time, the editor of this paper, this newsletter, this rag, said, you know, you're doing well. You could be making money from this. And I said, whatever do you mean? And he said, why don't you send your sample writing to Macworld and MacUser, which were the two big American magazines at the time. And I did. And Macworld got back to me immediately and said, we like your stuff. Can we try you out on a music software review? MacUser never even answered, and today they're out of business. So you put it together.
So David, I last saw you at Macworld 2005 in San Francisco, and you presented this wonderful presentation called Macworld Live, which featured, among others, MacBoy. And you talked to various other Mac users and also a historian with Andy Hertzfeld as well. So tell me about how that went for you.
Well, I had been doing keynote presentations for the Macworlds for several years in Boston and in San Francisco, but it was a lot of work and effort to come up with a new creation each year. And so this was their idea. They said, why don't you do a talk show? And it will be an annual event, so the structure, you don't have to reinvent every year. You'll have guests, you'll do comedy, you'll do songs at the piano. It sounded like a really good idea. So as you say, this was the very first one in January. They helped me get the guests, and it was great. It was a lot of fun, but it was nerve-wracking because I had never done it. I had never been a talk show host. We had very little rehearsal. Anyway, as you say, it went very well, and yes, we're going to redo it every year, every January. Right now, in the middle of booking my guests for this year. So if any of your listeners have done anything really unusual and very visual or audionic or video-ish that we could show as part of that, please drop me a note.
So where do people contact you for that?
My website would be great, or pogue@mac.com, just my last name, Pogue.
Will those parody songs be part of the show again? Because they were just hilarious.
Yes, I intend to write at least a couple new song spoofs each year, making fun of the current state of the Mac universe.
There has been some discussion lately about the demise of some of the bigger shows like Macworld Boston or the Mac West 10 conference by O'Reilly that was not scheduled for this year again. Do you have any suggestions what these shows are missing, the shows that we have today? What should be added to really make them the place to be for Mac users?
That's an interesting question. Although I should say, just as some are dying, others are being born. There's a new show being put on in New York to take the place of the East Coast Macworld show for next year, and I'll be part of that. I think it's called Mac Life or something like that. In any case, it is true that technology shows in general are, you know, computer shows, I should say, are not healthy. I mean, Comdex, the Windows PC one, is completely gone. It's just dead. They're not even having it anymore. And that used to be huge. So it might have to do more with the times, you know, that what a computer is a more standard, recognized commodity that, you know, you don't really need to go to see what's new. There's new printers, there's new scanners, yawn. At the same time, what could you add to make them more exciting? That's a good question. I do miss the old days of the Macworld Expos where companies would save the rollouts for the expo, including Apple. Now Apple rolls things out, you know, on a random day in September, you know, in a rented theater. It's just not the same anymore. And those are the days of the clones, the Macintosh clones. Remember Power Computing used to rent a Humvee and drive through the show floor, and it was a crazy spirited time that I do miss.
So David, can you tell me about the books you have available? The Tiger book, the Tiger edition you have for the Missing Manual series. Also, where people can get further information about you.
Sure. All the information is always on my website, davidpogue.com. And there you can find a free link to my New York Times column each week, to my weekly New York Times video that you mentioned, as well as links to where I'll be appearing and links to reach me.
So when can people see you next on CBS?
I actually have a really great segment coming up in December based on my experience of a dead hard drive. And I sent it out to this company, DriveSavers, a specialty firm that recovers data from dead hard drives. It's an amazing scene out there. We went and visited them and saw their clean room where they walk around in their spacesuits and dust-free environment. And we saw them take these drives apart. We saw them scraping people's desperate files off there. And they have a suicide counselor on the premises because people are so hysterical. It's just a mind-blowing story. So that'll air sometime in the next few weeks. I want to thank you guys because I'm interviewed a lot. And I have to say I don't remember two guys being more prepared. I know that you were asking questions you already knew the answers to. That's how prepared you were. And that's, in fact, what I do when I interview for CBS News. So that's the mark of a pro.
Thank you, David Pogue, for joining us.
Thank you guys very much.
So our thanks goes out to David Pogue. For more information, you can go to www.davidpogue.com or try the New York Times, where you'll find him as the technology writer each week. He's also producing really great podcasts at the moment through his technology site at the New York Times. So go there to get more information on David Pogue, www.davidpogue.com. So John, what do you think about the speakers at the Macworld UK conference?
I have the impression that speakers at a conference like this one always have to face a dilemma because, on the one hand, what they're talking about shouldn't be too in-depth and too techy and too geeky so that they don't frighten or scare the newbies. And it still should be interesting enough for the more experienced users. And I think what speakers like David really always achieve is that they always have those little tidbits and information and these little tips that you are not aware of just yet. You have the impression that you know a lot about the applications that they talk about, but usually it's those one or two things that they manage to present to you that you have never heard of before. For example, I was aware that iPhoto supported several libraries that you could use, that you could actually split the libraries and use separate ones, but I had no idea how you could do that. And David showed just that.
He did, yeah.
So I think that David is one of those people who are not only really entertaining, but they do find the right middle way between not being frightening to people who are there for the for their first Mac conference and where the topic is new for them, and also not being boring to those who are familiar with the subject. So he's excellent job. I really enjoyed this.
You have been listening to the first episode of a special edition of TechCast coming from the Macworld UK Conference 2005 at the Mac Expo 2005 at Olympia in London. For more information on the Macworld UK Conference, go to macworld.co.uk/conference. Stay tuned to hear the second part of the report from Mac Expo 2005, featuring interviews with author Andy Anarcho and Photoshop expert Deke McCulland. This podcast was produced and presented by Sam Downey and John Walters. This podcast was downloaded from www.dsound.co.uk.